I often say that sponsors aren't a great path for most company podcasts. The ROI just isn't there when other business goals are more immediate and more valuable than the income that can be generated by sponsors. But most is not all. And if it's a path that you've deemed is the right one for your show, I want you to have all of the information that you need to create a great package. That's what we're doing today. I'm Megan Doherty, the Reluctant Podcaster, and this is The Company Show, a podcast for when podcasting is just one of the many, many things you have to do every week. Now, sponsors don't work for every business podcast blueprint. If you're angling for conversions and you're optimizing your show to get people onto your email list or to buy other products or services, then every bit of airtime that a sponsor has is going to take away from you reaching that goal of more conversions. It's going to make reaching your ultimate goals harder, not easier for your podcast. But you've got a lot more wiggle room with all of the other blueprints that you might be working with. A relationship building show can have sponsors, and that's not going to detract at all from the connections that you're making with the guests that you have. It's a good idea to let your guests know that the show is sponsored, especially if you include any verbiage while you're recording so they don't get confused when you start talking about, and now, thanks to our sponsor. If possible, let your guests know in advance that you're going to call for a sponsor break at a particular moment, or you're going to tease that you're going to share something really big after the break. Just so they know what's happening and they don't get flustered by a change to what would otherwise be a pretty normal and natural conversation. Content shows can also really work well with sponsorships because they're so flexible. You don't need to make any special considerations one way or another here, other than that you have to make sure that you do enough promotion and audience cultivation work, which is going to create the audience that sponsors will value so that you have people that you can put those sponsors in front of. Now, thought leadership shows don't often work well for sponsorships because what you're doing when you bring on a sponsor to your thought leadership show is sharing that really valuable brain space that should be going to your brand and your ideas rather than a sponsor's. This isn't a hard and fast rule, however. Like, if there are lots of complementary and not competing businesses in your industry that you'd be happy to recommend to people anyway, then it can be a really win-win situation if you can negotiate a great deal. But for any of these, for relationship building, for content, for thought leadership, do keep in mind that every listener who follows sponsor CTA is probably not following one of your CTAs, and that may not be a trade-off you want to make. The real winning blueprint for sponsorships is audience engagement. What you're effectively doing with this type of show is building a new product, which is your audience, that you can sell to a new customer, your sponsors. So focusing on your audience, growing that audience, and increasing the engagement with them and the reach of your show is the best way forward. It's going to make the most compelling case for you to present to a potential sponsor. So I've never had sponsors for this show, and nor have I arranged them for the Podcasting for Business conference so far, although that's going to be changing this year. But what that means is that I don't have the absolute latest up-to-the-minute best practices on what makes a great sponsorship package or how to communicate it. But I'm lucky enough to know someone who does. Alex Durant is the owner of Durant Consulting Incorporated, where essentially she takes everything that can be a nightmare about coordinating large events with lots of sponsors and makes it much easier. So she works with companies to develop sponsorship packages and decks and coordinates to make sure everything is delivered as promised. For this reason, she is extremely sought after. I can tell you, if wrangling sponsors is anything like wrangling affiliates for big events, it's a huge job with a lot of moving parts and a lot of potential for things to go wrong. So Alex joined me. We're talking about all of the details about kind of designing a sponsorship package and communicating it really well. It was actually in talking to Alex for the show that convinced me to open up the Podcasting for Business conference to sponsorship this year. You can find more about that on pfbcom.com. But for now, I'm so excited to bring you our conversation where Alex shares how to think about sponsorship as it relates to your podcast and the environment that you're creating around it. Here it is. Alex, thank you so much for being here and joining us all on The Company Show.
So happy to be here.
So from your experience working with sponsors in different contexts, you know, largely in person, we are talking to podcasters, many of whom are looking at approaching sponsors and negotiating those kind of deals from their shows. Are there any industries that you think sponsors work particularly well in a virtual setting rather than being in person, like at a trade show or at a conference?
I mean, we all see, maybe I notice it because I'm in sponsorship, but sponsors are all around us. I mean, if you're watching TV, you see the cup of a specific major coffee chain sitting on the table of the judges' desks. If you're watching sports, whether in person or on TV, you see that they have sponsors on ads, on their uniforms, on their hats. Like, you know, I personally think we're surrounded by sponsorships, whether we really take notice of it or not. I mean, even like the local T-ball team for 8-year-olds has sponsored by so-and-so pizzeria on their t-shirts, right? So like sponsorships are everywhere. And I think you can apply the concept of sponsorship to pretty much anything, whether you're hosting a conference or a retreat or a festival or a gala or have a podcast, my biggest thing is you want to look at your sponsorship real estate, is what I call. You know, what do you have to offer back to the sponsor? If you're in person, of course, that's going to encompass any physical space at your event. So can the sponsor set up a table, or can they brand the bar, or is there bigger space for them to build some beautiful photo op or engagement activity with the guests, or to give out, talk about their product or service? But looking from a podcast standpoint, the other sponsorship real estate to consider is, obviously, you have commercial breaks, but do you do an email marketing campaign to talk about your podcast? And that way you could have maybe ad placement or logo placement, or even a dedicated section, a blurb for your sponsor to have an inclusion in that marketing piece. Do you do any social media surrounding your podcast that you could give them a dedicated post or do a shout out, you know, in a story? So you have to just look at everything. Your website, is there opportunities for the sponsors to be included on that? But then another item of sponsorship real estate I consider, especially in person, is there any opportunity for the sponsor or one of their representatives to speak at your event, whether that's just to do a welcome or do a dedicated session? So on a podcast setting, is there an opportunity for them to be a guest to talk about their business if it falls into, you know, alignment with what you're doing?
Right. And that's definitely a strategy we see sometimes is, you know, high level sponsorship packages. And especially this tends to be in podcasts that are really highly niched.
Right.
And let me know what you think. This often when there are a lot of commodities or software as a services or a lot of products associated with an industry, that tends to make a really good match for podcasting. And that kind of guest placement almost becomes like a magazine advertorial.
Right.
When you have the guest involved.
Which that leads me into kind of my next step in the process is, I call it the concept of brand rub. So you, as the event or the podcast, you want to align with sponsors that make sense for your brand. And what rubs off on you rubs off on them and vice versa. So if you're doing a podcast about the benefits of sleep and you have different sleep experts as your guests every episode, you probably don't want to get in the bed with an energy drink as one of your sponsors, right? Pun intended completely. But like, it would make more sense to have a mattress, have any other type of, you know, products or sponsors that also are talking about health and well-being. And that's like, what brands do you want to rub up against and what brands want to rub up against you? Because they're going to elevate you and you're going to elevate them. You know, a lot of times it makes, obviously I do a lot of wine and food festivals. That's why they always have a lot of wine sponsors, spirit sponsors, but also lifestyle brands that are part of the wine and food festivals as major sponsors, because they're hitting the same demographic of guests. That's why a big hotel chain will be a sponsor, a cruise line, a credit card company. Those all are brands that make sense for the mission of the event and vice versa.
Okay, so then it really kind of becomes an issue of specifically looking at business podcasting, finding complementary businesses who are, you know, talking about the same things, talking to the same audience, who are going to benefit from having access to that audience, rather than anyone who's willing to send you a couple of bucks for your ad read.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, just because someone might be willing to give you some dollars, is it worth the reputation of having them as a sponsor for your reputation? Does it make sense at all?
Yeah. And that question of worth is one that, you know, it obviously comes up a lot in our work, because a lot of people who are podcasting as a business, they've got their own products and service to sell and that valuable airtime, especially I'd say when you are a newer show and when you are still developing the audience and you don't have a whole lot of listeners, it's going to be a lot better return on your investment and a lot better use of that space to talk about your own products and services. And I know your experience is broadly in events and in the real world of marketing. But do you have a sense of how much audience or how many downloads, how many listeners a podcast should have before they start thinking about approaching sponsors? Like, what would make it worthwhile for a company?
You got to put something together. So if you have no data, if you're going into episode one, you need to show what your podcast is about, what the mission is, who your key demographic or key audience member is, and show that, like, your goal. Starting from episode one, it's probably not the best time to be sending out sponsorship packages unless you're just saying, like, hey, I'm bringing this to market. I'm really looking for, you know, kind of underwriters, basically. But once you have some data, it's important to show all of that. You know, you want to show how many people are listening, repeat, just any analytics that you can put in your proposal. But then, as I said before, like, anything else surrounding your podcast, if you're sending out social media about it, then why don't you put your, you know, your engagement rate that you're getting on Facebook or Instagram or X or whatever you're doing. If you're sending out an email about the next upcoming episode, how many did it go out to? What was your open rate? What was your click-through rate? Anything surrounding your podcast that you're using to market it could also feed into the analytics that you're sharing with sponsors.
Yeah, and that really changes the conversation, doesn't it? Because if, say, I've got a new show and maybe I'm getting only 150 downloads a month, and that's not a very impressive number to bring to a sponsor. But if, you know, tied with that is, you know, my email list of 1,500 and then a, you know, LinkedIn following of 5,000. And if there's things that go along with all of that, then together combined, it makes a much more compelling offer.
Right. And I think recently I heard that's called, like, your sphere of influence. You know, if you're sending it out to a larger networking group that you're a part of and they're willing to share your posts, and someone in that sphere has 100,000 followers, you can kind of use that, not as in your deck, but as when you're talking to someone, hey, I also know it gets shared by this certain influencer or this certain person with this many followers. So they're helping to boost your internal data.
Would it be, or is it a done thing, or do you think it could be a done thing? You know, if you are negotiating a sponsorship and you've got really good friends in the industry, can you even just straight up ask for that kind of visibility bump on a sponsored post? Or would you consider that something that is sort of not done?
What's the worst that can happen? They say no. I read all the time, like, I see this all the time. The first place you go, if you're wondering who sponsors XYZ type event, you go to their event and you look at their sponsor page, and then you think, mm-hmm. Well, if I'm doing a similar type event, those are the types of sponsors that I should go after. So I know that looking at competing podcasts even is going to be a great place to start with seeing who's willing to sponsor a podcast in this industry or around this topic. You know, you also need to consider, like, how big are the companies you're going after? Do they have a marketing budget?
That's a really good question, because, you know, a lot of businesses are so big that making an approach to them is, you know, basically you're entering an inbox labyrinth that you may never see the other side of. And then there are a lot smaller companies maybe who have never done this kind of sponsorship or advertising before. You mentioned briefly a deck. Can you just talk about what that is and what else should go into your initial approach if you find, like, say a small company versus a big company? What information?
I think when you're building your sponsorship deck or sponsorship proposal or sponsorship prospectus, whatever you want to call it, first off, you need to talk about your podcast. What is it? I think we mentioned this at the talk. What is your podcast about? Who are you as the host? Who are your guests joining the podcast? And then any key analytics that you can use as data, whether it's about the audience or about your social market, your marketing plan, marketing strategy, what your engagement is like. And then you need to come up with your real estate. What are you offering? What are you selling to the sponsor? And whether that's tiered, you know, if you come up with different sponsor levels, I hate to use gold, silver, bronze, but whatever they are, tier one, tier two, tier three, at a minimum, all silver sponsors get this. They get logo here. They get one post or mention. They get this, they get that. Then, and that costs X amount of dollars. Then moving into silver, you get all of the previous deliverables plus these extra things. Like, why am I paying more money? Because you get more out of it. Then the highest level, you get all of the below plus this, this, and this. So it needs to be very clear, I think, the sponsorship proposal. It can't just be like, call us for information. I want to see, when I look at a proposal, just like when I'm booking a hotel room, well, how much does it cost? You can tell me all about the king size bed or the suite or the two doubles and a twin. But if I don't know the price between each one, am I going to call the hotel to ask? No. So I want to see the deliverables, see what the benefits are, what am I getting out of it, and then know what I'm getting into to start the conversation. And then, of course, once you start having a conversation and maybe there's some flexibility of what you're willing to offer or they're asking for, actually, we don't even do Facebook. We don't have a Facebook. It doesn't make sense for us to be on yours. Could we get two of these instead of one of those? Like, you have to be willing to be flexible instead of cut and dry. These are our packages. We're not doing anything else but these three packages.
I mean, there's something to be said for clarity. Let's say you've got sort of your list of companies that would be a good fit, and you've got a deck that, you know, clearly describes your metrics, your audience, and the placements that are available. But how do you actually make the approach? How do you actually, like, a company that doesn't know you from Adam, how do you kind of get in there and say, hey, you should buy some space on my podcast?
Well, that's probably a question more for your marketing expert than I know you've had a previous podcast with. But I think there's something to be said with picking up the phone and really, you know, finding out who you could speak to, having a brief conversation, following up with the deck instead of just, what do they call, like, the spray method, where you're just like shooting this email out to blind all these BCC'd people that you're just hoping someone responds.
Every introvert and half of all millennials have just hit stop on this episode.
Pick up the phone. What? What?
Okay, so let's say cold calling or targeted cold calling is one approach.
That's one approach. I mean, if you're going to do an email, it needs to be very direct, obviously, and make sure it makes sense that they're, you know, something that you're promoting, and they're, you got to grab them right away of why they should even read further. This is the podcast. This is what it's about. This is a perfect in alignment with everything that you stand for as a brand or as a service. It makes complete sense for you to be a sponsor. And now here's what the offer is.
And would you include the offer like in that initial outreach? Or would you kind of get a little interest first and then kind of follow up with more details if there's bite?
I don't see why you wouldn't have the proposal attached. You know, it's like, why make them do a second step? I would imagine some people are going to think, I'm priced out. It's probably too expensive. Whereas if you have it attached, they look, oh, wow, this is actually, you know, there's some good options here that they've got different levels of pricing. There's one I could actually afford. This is in alignment with my mission. And then they want to click to hear more or call you, schedule a call to hear more about it. I mean, I'm not going to say it's easy. Or else everybody would have sponsors. I do not do sponsorship sales. I just help people get it ready, and then they can go after the sponsors themselves.
Well, no, and definitely good to kind of clarify that sales is its own thing. You know what I mean?
It's its own skill set.
Yeah, it's got its own. But like, let's assume someone is brave enough to get on the phone. In your experience, is the person who's going to make that decision, yes, we want to do the sponsorship, the same as the person you'll be coordinating with about all of the details?
Definitely not, which brings me to all of that conversation from building that, you have your sponsorship proposal, but then to building their specific contract needs to be captured in that contract. You know, you need to capture everything you've promised, where their logo is going to be, how long it's going to live on your website, for instance. If they're getting social media, how many posts, what channel? You know, is it across all channels? Is it only one channel? I have certain clients that don't allow any sponsorship posts on their Instagram. They keep it very proprietary, and a sponsor post is only goes on Facebook or maybe an IG story. So that has to be very clear, because if you just say one social media post, that could be taken as, well, one social media post against all platforms. When is it going to run? Is it, you know, a week before the podcast airs? Is it after the podcast airs? Because that makes more sense that the podcast airs and then they see a social media post. You know, all of that needs to be captured in the contract, because to your point, whoever's doing the deal is going to be different than who's actually taking care of those deliverables within that company. It might just be passed to some, you know, intern, here's what we're getting. Send them our logo, create some content. They need to know exactly what's been promised.
Yeah, your people will talk to my people is always such an issue. I'm glad you brought up contracts, because that's a big issue. You know, a lot of podcasts, even ones for professional ones from big companies, operate, you know, without a lot of specific like releases for guests or any kind of protections around IP, anything like that. And that's, you know, changing as the industry develops. But you'd say, like, for a sponsorship contract, Is there a particular amount of money you think that is absolutely necessary for, or is it ever acceptable to have a handshake type of deal on this sort of thing?
I mean, you could always just do a smaller, like, letter of agreement. Even if it's a one-page document that's, we've agreed to these terms, here they are, bullet point, bullet point, bullet point, signed and dated. Why not have it on file? Is it even worth $500 to ensure that they're going to pay you that money that they've promised, and you're going to do the deliverables, and then once you do them, you know it's done? Like, I would always back myself up with any kind of something in writing.
It's good to have a paper trail. That almost falls under kind of like clarity is kindness. You know, if you get it on a chance, everybody's got a chance to agree, yes, this is what we're doing. And then it makes really easy. And I'd love to you to talk a little bit kind of completing a mandate for this sort of thing. So what type of information is it typical to provide a sponsor, say, after a sponsorship term is ended?
I'd say any reporting that you can give, you call that a recap deck, your official recap, is fantastic. Even if it's a simple one page of, this is how many podcasts we did this year, you were a part of a series of 3 out of 20, or maybe they signed up for all, or maybe they just did one. That particular podcast episode had this many downloads, the social media surrounding it had this, you know, just like we talked about before, this many clicks, this many open rates, we deployed this many stories, like whatever you can show to back up as backup data, so they can review and see the ROI for their sponsorship. And then you take that recap deck and move it into, let's talk about next year, re-upping the contract terms. I mean, you immediately, now that becomes part of your next proposal, is the recap from last year, from the previous term.
Well, here's a question that hopefully won't come up for anyone listening, but what if the recap is unimpressive? And what if the sponsor is not delighted with the investment that they've made and the results that came from it? Have you ever kind of seen that happen, or how do you navigate that as someone who sold the sponsorship, or not that you sold the sponsorship, but as, you know, someone, a podcaster who might?
I mean, you definitely need to be completely transparent. And maybe, you know, I've had a festival where maybe they didn't sell as many cocktails as they thought they were going to. But then you have to say, was it because we had bad weather and we didn't have as many guests? Like, was there a reason that makes sense? I don't know what would go wrong in a podcast, but maybe there was technical difficulties and it made the listeners exit out. I don't know, but
maybe the possibility, if you're a tech podcast and you need to talk about tech news and you've got your sponsor on, but then all of a sudden another podcast gets the exclusive scoop on Elon Musk's new purchase.
Right.
That's going to take all of the listening attention.
Right.
And there's just
right.
nothing to be done in that situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
So is there ever a case for guarantees? Is that an expected part of, you know, arranging a sponsorship deal, that you'll be guaranteed a certain amount of, I know in podcasts it might be downloads or listening time or a number of impressions. Is that typical for a sponsor to ask to have included?
Not in the contracts that I've seen. You're telling them what you know you can give them, and you're going to promise that you're going to deliver that, but you don't give a guarantee of how many people will click it if we put it on social media. How many people will sign up for their offer if they gave you a dedicated post that had a 10% off or a 20% off? There's not that guarantee included. No.
No, always good to know what kind of is standard and expected.
Right, right.
In the industry. Any final thoughts or words of advice for a podcast thinking about dipping their toe into sponsorship for the first time?
Give it a go. Put a little proposal together. You obviously are doing a podcast because you believe in it and you believe in what you're putting out there. There's more than likely someone else that's going to believe in it and wants to support that and knows that their brand or service is in alignment with what you're doing, and it's going to make sense. But you have to put the proposal together, send it out into the world.
And maybe pick up the phone.
Right. People say to me, can you help me get sponsors for my event? And I say, sure, send me your sponsorship proposal. I'll look at it and see if it, you know, I don't do sales, but if there's someone I know that I've in the industry, they say, well, we don't have a sponsorship proposal. So what did you think was going to happen? You were just going to say out loud, hey, I want sponsors for my podcast, and their phone was going to start ringing? Like, you have to have something to say.
What I hear is the heartbreak of all marketing. It's just, you know, we're brilliant. We put out wonderful content. Our services are amazing. Why are people not flocking to us? Because we are here.
I mean, you have to ask, or else people may not know you're even looking for sponsors for your podcast.
Yeah. Awesome. So can you just tell everyone quickly, What type of person should reach out to you to get your support with managing their sponsorship programs, and where can they find you?
If you're feeling overwhelmed, if you're hosting an event and you haven't even thought of where to start with putting together a sponsorship proposal, I'd love to help with that. I walk in a room at an event and I immediately think, how come that bar doesn't have, you know, sponsored by so-and-so, or why isn't the music like have a little sign next to it say,
you're so fun at parties,
presented by so-and-so. Like everything I look at, it's like, oh, that could be sponsored. That could have a sponsor. That could be sponsored. So I'm happy to do that. And then I also do work with larger events if they need, with many sponsors, creating their sponsorship communication, not necessarily a podcast, but in a bigger event. Once all these sponsors start signing on, they want to know what's going on. You know, when is the social media deliverables due, and what are the specs for that content, and when are they getting their tickets, and how many staff credentials do they get, and what time is load in? So I help put all that communication together. And then again, I manage the sponsors on site so that I make sure they're happy, they know what's going on. If their power goes out, they can call me, and then I'm on radio and can call the event team to get it back up immediately. So it's like they're dedicated, you know, like white glove concierge service on site.
Perfect. If you want to just say your website for the listening public, and we'll also put the link in the show notes.
It is durantconsulting.com.
Perfect. Alex, thank you so much. This has been so interesting, so valuable. And I wonder if you've convinced anyone to make a cold call.
I hope so.
I hope so too.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. So now that we've had that extremely useful run through of the different kinds of sponsorship that you can negotiate, what might go into a comprehensive package, and all of those other amazing details, I want to quickly address one of the technical issues that you're going to run into if you want to do ads within your podcast itself. You've got two options, baked in or dynamic ad insertion, or DIA. Baked in means that you're going to record the sponsor advertisement like it's a regular part of the body of the episode. It's a permanent part of the show that's always going to be there. This can be fine if you know that the ad you're sharing is going to be relevant forever and you don't ever want to replace it with something new. Dynamic ad insertion, on the other hand, or DIA, means that you leave a space, often with some transitional verbiage before and after it, like we'll be right back and we're back, and use your podcast host to add ads that can be changed retroactively into the future. So these can be found in marketplaces maybe that your host provides. They can be ads provided to you by your sponsor, or ads that you produce independently. But it's a separate audio file that is added to the host separately from the main body of audio and has its own configuration for when it plays and to whom. All things being equal, if your host allows dynamic ads, that's what you should go with. It means that you're going to have a great deal of power over what you're promoting, when, and to whom. And you can change the ads globally to make room for new promotions when you want to. The way most podcast hosts work is that when you upload your audio, you can place a little marker that tells the host, this is where I want a dynamic ad to play. And in the production side of things, you have to make sure that you are leaving a space for that ad to go. And on the recording side, as I mentioned earlier, you want to make sure that if you have verbiage or any kind of transitional language, you're including that as well, either as part of the ad that you're producing or as part of the main body of your episode. So most podcast hosts that offer dynamic ad insertion will have pre-roll and post-roll functionality. Pre-roll plays before any episode content. Post-roll plays at the end of all content. But if you really want to pursue sponsorships, then you want to look for a host that also offers dynamic mid-rolls. And these can be placed where you want it within the body of the audio. Mid-roll ads are more likely to be listened to than post-roll ads, and they're significantly less annoying than pre-rolls. All right, so that's what I've got for you on sponsorship for this week. Next week, I've got another awesome guest who, in the course of one single conversation, is going to fix Instagram for you. For real. It's very exciting. Ruthie Sterrett is a Fractional Chief Marketing Officer, and one of the things that we talked about over our conversation is where in your marketing funnel social media exists. Is it top of funnel attracting new people? Is it nurturing people who are already aware of you? Is it sealing the deal? We often consider social media a top of funnel play, but is it really? Here's a quick preview of what Ruthie has to say about it.
So it's important to decide and be intentional about, where are we attracting? Well, from a social media perspective, the ways that you attract or get new eyes on your business is typically video content, because we know it gets shown to audiences that don't already follow us, hence that like attract new business, or paid ads. That's pretty much it. So if you're not doing one of those two things on social media, you are not using social media for the top of funnel. This is going to be a great one. Subscribe to The Company Show so you don't miss it. Links will be in the show notes. As a final note today, please remember that speaker applications for this year's Podcasting for Business conference are open now. If you have a skill, strategy, insight, or methodology that you think a business owner who podcasts needs to know, then I want to hear about it. Head over to pfbcon.com/apply. That's pfbcon.com/apply and fill in the form that you find there to tell me and my team what you want to share with the community at the Podcasting for Business conference. As always, I've been your host, Megan Doherty, and The Company Show was created by the whole team at One Stone Creative. If you found some value here today, please share the episode with someone that you think should have a podcast. Until next time.